Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Void, a show dedicated to filling the void between being an employee and becoming self-employed. Most people refer to starting their own company as taking the leap, as if they're blindly jumping off a cliff and into the unknown. This show is here to help you understand that it doesn't have to be that way. As always, if you like what you're hearing on the show, please do us a favor and help share The Void with somebody else who might be wanting to start their own company. Just as we saw an opportunity to help others understand that self-employment is well within our reach and our businesses have grown organically and by word of mouth, we want this show to grow the same way. So if you see somebody asking questions about starting their own service-based business, please do us a favor and send them a link to the show. I'm your host, Mitch Smedley, and with me as always is David Hilton.
My man.
My
brother.
From another mother.
I got a few things I want to talk about. I have an embarrassing story to tell about myself.
You didn't stab yourself in the leg skinning a deer, did you?
No.
Because it is not deer season.
Just
so
I got bigger problems if I've done that. No. Yeah. No, not this time.
Babe, we're gonna need a new bumper.
Yeah, I only stabbed myself the one time while skinning a deer. I've stabbed myself some other times, but not while skinning a deer. So I'm getting new tattoos, right?
Right.
Getting some new stuff. I've wanted for a long time, right? And I'm getting the one on my hand. I got the one on my hand, and the guy's doing one on my arm, right?
Right.
And two young guys walk by, and one of the guys literally says to his buddy, he was like, "Hey, man, what do you think that is?" And his buddy, without hesitating, says, "A midlife crisis." I'm not fucking with you. That's what he said to me. I mean, I'm like... Well, my first reaction was I laughed, and then I thought, do I look that... Like, I don't look old. Do I look like I'm... midlife?
Maybe you weren't facing them.
Well, they did
like a child face.
They did walk behind me, but I was like, dude, like that's like it was brutally quick.
Yeah.
And I had mad respect for him, but then I thought about it and I was like, man, these motherfuckers.
You got burned.
I got burned.
By a stranger.
Burned. Yeah.
The stranger burn.
And then so they leave and go down and get some. There's like three tattoo, I don't know what to say, areas in this shop, and they come back and the kid's walking out, and I was like, hey man. Like, that was good, but fuck you.
Yeah.
Dude, like, I was like, yeah, but fuck you, man. Yeah. Like, you know, but it was, like, I was, like, you know me. I don't get embarrassed. I don't care. Like, my face got red, and I was like, man, is he right?
That's funny.
Is he right?
And then he sees your face, and he's like, oh, that's not a midlife crisis.
Well.
Welcome to 21.
He didn't say anything. They just walked out. And I was like, man, because the guy that was doing my work, his name's Andrew. He's really cool. He was like, man. I thought there was going to be a fist fight in here. I was like, dude, I'm not mad about it. I just, you know.
For all you know, they're talking about something else.
No.
They're like.
Oh, no. They were looking both.
Like, why do you think dad bought a Corvette? What do you think that is? Midlife crisis?
That's like one of those.
No. Reels. It was completely at me.
It's one of those reels where you go into a trance and you go home and you put on the white sneakers and the khaki shorts that button up. And
Mitch,
you're like.
Mitch just did quit wearing white sneakers not too long ago.
I'm wearing black sneakers now, but these are my working shoes.
I was gonna say now, like 5 years ago, Mitch was rocking some white New Balances for sure.
Maybe
there were some white New
They're
Balances.
Surprisingly comfortable.
They are. They are surprisingly.
Nikes
comfortable.
Are not comfortable.
No, I'll they're not. I hate Nikes. And
they're like, fashionable, but not comfortable.
Yeah, and you know I don't understand. Like I remember when we were kids, like you could get a pair of Nikes and they'd last forever. Like my daughter, I bought her like three pairs and they're just junk. Like. Yeah. What like what?
Them kids in China need a raise, man.
The price is the same, but she can only wear them for like 3 months, and they're all crap. I'm like, man, what happened?
Yep.
Like they used to be so great.
Yeah.
I do Adidas.
I don't get it, man. I like Adidas
like
too.
Like the Boost they have.
I think I'm wearing Adidas. I don't know. Am I?
I follow a couple of guys
I like these.
That are sneakerheads.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not a sneakerhead by any means, but it's kind of an interesting thing.
It is an interesting thing.
Like these guys are following like dead stock and old stock and all this stuff.
Yeah, new old stock.
Man, it's wild. Like an old, like a pair of dead stock or old stock shoes that have never been worn, they'll like crumble.
Yeah,
and then you get some that were worn like at least once a month for a couple of years, and they don't crumble.
They're
it's kind of funny.
Like they've been taken care of.
The soles will just literally fall apart on some of these
old.
It's
so weird.
It's so funny. Yeah.
I don't understand why people spend money on that.
It's crazy hell.
Like
it's crazy how much money they spend on them too.
Yeah, I know.
It's wild.
What'd you do today? You know what I did today? I put new locators on my boat.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We talked about it with Joe the other night on a Tradewinds call. I finally got them all. I'm ready, man. I'm tired of it being cold.
So how's that work? Do you get the Apple Vision Pro goggles on there and it simulates like you're fishing and it tells you where the fish are? And
it doesn't, like they're not goggles, but I've got that Garmin LiveScope. Like, so it's So the beam goes out wide like this, right?
Right.
And it goes like this. And it's on a swivel. And you just spin it around until you see fish. And then you can literally, you can see them swimming.
Yeah.
And you can drop your bait down right on their nose and just pull them out of the water.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, everyone knows it's cheating. Like,
but they all do it.
I don't care. Fuck it. I mean, I don't have a lot of time to be out there like perusing and learning where the fish go. Like, I'm busy. I don't have time for that.
Anytime you see a bass boat with 56-inch LCD TVs on it, you know that they've got a Garmin LiveScope. They're kidding.
Mine's a 12, and it's touchscreen. I mean, it's big. It's like that fucking big. I love it.
Have you ever seen the video of the guys ice fishing?
Oh, yeah, those are cool, too.
And he leans forward to check something, and his phone slides off his lap right into the hole. And then they look over on the LiveScope, and there's his phone. Like,
I haven't seen that one,
sliding down the water, just, you know, floating down side to side. And man, they're like, oh, there it is. It's on the bottom now.
And it's
gotta be
over.
It's got to be hard with fishing because there's probably that guy that's like, if you're not walking out barefoot and reaching out with your hands, you're not fishing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got to stick your face in the water.
And most of it's like, jealousy.
Do you see the,
like, you know, oh, okay, you can't afford one. Sorry.
Do you see the Missouri record and world record spoonbill?
Dude, that thing was huge.
That thing's a human.
That's a big spoonbill.
That thing's human size.
Have you ever been snagging?
Uh-huh.
I went one time. So basically, there's two guys standing on the back of a boat, usually, not always. And they literally have these giant catfish poles, or like this, right? And it's a giant treble hook. There's no food on it.
Yeah.
And they're just literally doing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Up and down.
All day.
Shoulder
and bicep killer.
Like, how can that be fun?
I don't know.
I don't get it. Like, it just...
I
did it one time. I was like, man, this fucking sucks.
Yeah. I enjoy fishing in short spurts, but this is my ADD, like, coming on raging as I'm getting into my 40s. It's getting bad. Like, I know you are now.
I know you are, dude.
I just can't do the ADD thing with fishing. It just doesn't...
Dude, I tell you what. What's cool about the LiveScope is it helps because you can see them on there.
Yeah.
And so you know that if there's nothing there, you just move on.
Yeah.
It's good for kids. So the real reason I got the LiveScope is, so my father-in-law has one, and he would take Layla, and like, she's into
it. She wanted to go fishing with Grandpa more than you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not that, but she can see the screen and knows that she can move the wand around and fish.
Gives her something to
do. So it gives her a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah.
And so she's not as bored.
Right.
So I was like, well, shit, I'll just get one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's...
And spent 2 days putting it in.
Yeah.
Pissed, bent over. I was like, man, shit.
That's funny.
I know. But what'd you do today?
You don't spend any time bent over.
No, not usually. My name's not Smedley.
Oh, man.
Oh, so don't start no shit. There won't be no shit.
You asked what I did today.
Yeah, what'd you do today? I mean, I know, but I want to...
Yeah, we...
fucked up someone's sewer. Got it.
Yeah.
Great. Fantastic.
We're doing a pipe bursting sewer replacement. It's about 100 feet long from the house to the tap. And the sewer goes out their finished basement floor under a stamped patio, like stamp stained concrete patio,
like
under some concrete stairs, under their driveway, under the road, under the neighbor's driveway.
Oh, shit.
And then to the tap.
Let me ask you something. Like, where is it? Because
Lee Summit.
Anything new, you're not allowed to cross property lines with the tap. Your tap has to be on your lot. Now,
well, no, the city mains on the other side of the street.
Oh, okay.
So,
that being said, let me ask you another question.
Mm-hmm.
So normally the stub has to go under the street, and that is the city's problem.
It is until you hook up to it. And then when you hook up to the city stub, you now own the stub and you're responsible.
Oh, you own the stub too in Lee Summit.
You're responsible for the lateral all the way until it makes contact with the main.
That's where I was going with that.
Yep.
So some cities are, once you get onto their deal, they take it from there. Some of them are, you own it until the main.
Yeah. And
that's why I was asking.
And it's different in every municipality around the nation.
Yeah.
The only city where you're only worried about your line on your property is Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah.
Kansas City, Missouri is 13 feet from the curb or the backside of the sidewalk, whichever is farther from the curb. That is your obligation.
Yeah.
So if there's no sidewalk, then it's 13 feet back from the curb. If there is a sidewalk, it's whichever's farther.
So tell me what happened.
So we're going to pull this sewer, and we get it all set up, and we've taken amazing care. I was not on the job yesterday. Austin was there.
Well, the locates were wrong starting off.
Of course they were.
Which locates?
So
all of them.
The sewer locate or the telecommunication locates?
So I remember seeing a
challenge
orange line that was for a network line.
So yep.
And then so it wasn't that line. It was on the other side of the street. So I think
you're going to turn him into a plumber.
I think I saw the main and the sewer line, and it was maybe like a couple feet.
Yeah.
Couple feet off.
Both of them were off?
Yeah, so the telecommunication locates were about 2 feet off. Thankfully, they were 2 feet off in our favor.
Were telecommunications, was that the big stake that was in the ground, like maybe like a door or so
down?
Was
it Comcast or?
I don't know. It's just orange.
Just orange.
But
well, the flags are usually AT&T, Comcast.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw any flags on this one. It's just paint.
I saw like some orange flags.
You gotta get flags, man. Then they're good for 2 weeks if something happens.
No, I know.
Always call locates with flags.
Yeah, ultimately, the...
teaching Mitch something here.
the telecommunication locates were a little off.
Oops.
And the telecom people, they did the whole, like, I hate it when locators do this, where they're not super confident with it. And so they paint the two lines with the diamond in between them.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I know.
That's bullshit.
And so they buy more real estate and more coverage that way. But thankfully they were not right.
They were
but
still
were,
off.
They were farther away from where we needed to dig than what we needed to. We still had to find it. But we go to start pulling the pipe today.
So you didn't cut anything, though. Locates were off, but you didn't cut anything.
Yeah, no, we didn't cut anything.
Oh, okay. Well, no big deal. I thought you were going into this whole thing about, oh,
no.
We cut everybody. Everybody come outside.
We're
screaming.
And
a bunch of yellow.
Yeah, the green locate's ours.
Okay, so the green locate that was off. Then.
Yeah.
Oh, you fucked up your own locates.
Well, we got one camera that's not... We got one camera that's
fixed.
Acting a little up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might sell the fucking thing. It's
not even send it in to get it fixed. It's just like throw it, like sell
well,
it, and then
fix
buy
it
something
and then
else.
Sell it. The we've got one camera that's got a real small push rod.
Yeah,
and it likes to get kinked all the time.
It?
They're rigids.
Oh, I hate rigids. I like the Spartans.
The small push rod likes to get kinked all the time, so I might just say screw it on the small ones and do the big ones from now on. But
regardless,
everything went
continue
fine,
on, sir.
We go to start pulling today, and all of a sudden, our pulling machine, right about the time the bursting head is going to go underground. Our pulling machine just starts moving all over the place. And we're like, all right, maybe we got some weak soil. Maybe we didn't crib it enough. Like, you got to put cribbing against the wall to support the pulling resistance and everything. Maybe we didn't crib it well enough. Like, who knows?
Yeah. Hydraulics is a bitch when you get that much stuff going.
Yeah, 60,000 pounds of force, right?
Yeah.
And so, actually, it's 60 tons, so that'd be 120,000 pounds of force.
I knew what you meant.
And so, we disassemble everything, pull everything out of the hole, reset. Reshape the ditch, do it again. First stroke. It makes contact, gets tight. First stroke, pulls into the dirt again.
Oh,
and we're like,
shit.
Son of a gun. So we go inside and start examining. And it turns out we have another case where the sewer is encased in concrete in the footing. And I've done pipe bursting.
I only laugh because it's not me, man.
Yeah, I know.
Like, you know.
I've done pipe bursting for 16 years now. We just brought it on at our company, but I've done it at other companies before ours in a lot of times. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pipe bursts. And only once prior to Smedley Plumbing, only once ever in my career did I run into concrete encasement. And now we've run into it twice in like 2 or 3
just
months.
Bad luck.
It just sucks.
Yeah. It may be one of those things that you don't see another one for like 5 years.
Hopefully.
Well, also,
like it could just be, you know what I mean?
Hope you're
like
right.
You just don't know.
Also too, when I showed up yesterday, it was like maybe 10:30-ish, and it was like one of those jobs where it's like, I thought I was only going to be there for like 20 minutes because it was going so quick. Like, man, we got the inside done, got the outside done, and it just goes to show you like how how jobs can look so like easy.
Yeah.
And you get in there and it's like, oh, no, this is actually a 3-day job now.
Right.
One wrench. It only takes one wrench.
And that's the thing
really
with pipe bursting is there's about 400 things that could go wrong on the job. And so it takes a while to train a good pipe bursting crew because you have to give them exposure to all of those. And so a couple of wear parts broke on our pulling machine today, and I didn't have the wear parts with me, so Danielle had to bring them out.
Ooh.
And so she shows up, and she doesn't care. It's spring break. She's, you know, the kids are home. The kids came with her. One kid did anyway.
Yeah, she's not doing anything anyway. Let's be honest.
And so she comes out
looking
and she
for
knows
to do.
She already knows the job's going south real fast. And so she's like, "Wow, you're really calm." And I'm like, "Well, getting mad's not gonna fix anything. Like, I got to stay calm to come up with a solution here because right now we got no solution."
Yeah.
So
you're like, "Oh, shit."
We're bringing out the core drillers tomorrow. Got to core drill a footing with our cable still in the pipe in the line. That's going to be a challenge.
It's not going to be a challenge. It's going to be a motherfucker.
It's going to be a mother.
It's
going
to be a bitch.
It's going to suck.
Yeah,
so.
It could.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing on The Void and you want even more info, we just started a mentorship program specifically for trades professionals to start their business or to get their business to an incredibly healthy position. So if you'd like more info, click on the link in the description of this show.
It could be bad.
But yeah, hopefully we'll have good news to report on that next podcast.
Right.
What are we talking about today, Dave?
Follow up. That's why I asked you about the sewer. How'd you get that sewer?
So this sewer actually came from following up.
Didn't know I was going there with that, did you?
Oh, shit.
See a picture of Dave on a Segway, and every time he does like an awesome Segway, just cut in a video
of
him.
That would be great. I'll do it.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome. Just ride Segway.
You know the owner of Segway died on a Segway, right?
No.
No, I'm serious. He did.
Sorry.
No, and I don't care.
Yeah, look it up. Oh, look it up. The inventor of the Segway died from a Segway accident.
I care when people I know die. When famous people, rich people die, I don't care.
Yeah.
It almost makes me feel like I should care and that I'm a dick. But I mean, realistically, they did not impact my life. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Death happens.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we got this sale from this job from follow-up. So how service guys handle follow-up is they typically don't handle follow-up.
No, they don't.
They walk into a job. They try to sell the job. If the customer says no, then they were like, well, I guess that's it. Austin, did you look up the Segway thing?
He died in 2010 from injury sustained falling from a cliff while riding his own Segway.
Dude, he went off a cliff?
He went off a cliff.
First off, if you go off a cliff on a Segway, like it's not that fast, you can bail. He wanted to die. Yeah. I'm just calling it like I see it.
Yeah.
Like that guy wanted to die. Oh, poor Austin, dude. Yeah. Like
Austin loves the dry humor, and that's
full his fucking alley, man. Yeah. That is right up his
especially
alley.
Especially if that was a dry creek bed that he fell into instead of a... Yeah.
Well, the thing is, like, he's a former coal miner, so this dude's like...
Oh, that like, does make me typical, feel bad. Like he was a real worker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, I've watched people eat some serious shit on Segways and bird scooters or whatever. Like every city's got them. They call them a different thing in every city.
The hoverboards? Those are the best crashes.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, when a big guy goes flat back.
You ever seen Mike Tyson eat shit?
Dude,
I
saw it on Ridiculousness when he was on Ridiculousness. Like he eats it hard.
Look up the video of Mike Tyson eating shit on a hoverboard. It's one of the funnier ones.
He's a big dude, man. Yeah. I'm not going to say that I... bought my daughter one and that 4 years ago I ate shit in my living room.
Yeah.
But I ate shit in my living room. Same thing. Flat backed as fuck. Boom.
I couldn't
breathe for like an hour.
I got my kids a couple of them. I've never crashed one. I've come close.
I was
like, I've seen the makings of it.
The
little wiggle and then it's back and forth down, right?
You gotta bail, man.
So we actually got it to where we found out it's like you lean forward and try to accelerate as fast as you can. And ours beeps at you when you're leaning forward too far and it can't keep up with you.
Lens doesn't.
And so we would like hot shot across the living room and roll, like wrinkle the carpet in the living room. And we finally got it to where it was like, nope. And we leaned it forward too far and it just stopped.
Yeah.
And then you have to step off the front of it.
Yeah. Hers is awesome. It like, it'll do our gravel driveway.
Yeah.
Like it's legit.
Wow.
And it's awesome.
Using those one wheels.
Oh, yeah. Those are cool.
First off, three or four Halloweens ago, we took Layla over to the subdivision over here to one of her little friend's house.
Yep.
And that girl's dad had one. He's like, hey, man, you want to try it? I was like, hell yeah. Dude, I rode that thing all over the neighborhood.
Yeah, they're cool.
I think he told me it was like $2,200. Yeah, I was like,
Line one with the big battery is like about $2,000.
Yeah,
I was like, for about $1,500.
Yeah, the cheapest one I want to say is maybe they made it $1,000
or $1,500. Yeah, somewhere. Something like that.
Like it was cool, but I mean, I'm not.
Well, you see them a lot in the videographer community because it's like they can just get on them and it's like their own dolly or gimbal.
Yeah, you can shoot.
Yeah.
They are cool though.
So
where are we going with
back to follow up?
What the fuck are we talking about?
Segway back.
Oh, that's
we'll
Austin's
drop our passenger down a cliff and
that's
come
Austin's
back here.
Fault for bringing up Segway.
No, it's
it's actually really your fault.
So this anyway,
is a collective effort.
Yeah,
we all jumped off the cliff.
I did nothing.
Yeah, only
this time
we're getting back on the cliff.
Okay.
So follow up. This job actually came from follow up, but most companies and most people are terrified to follow up. And the reason why is because they're terrified to be told no, right? And so what
they're not confident. Well, that's why they're terrified.
Some of it's a lack of confidence. Some of it's just a fear of being told no, right?
You think?
And they just don't want to be, it's just uncomfortable, right? And so the trick that I do, and I don't know if this would work for everybody, but the trick that I do is I put myself into the mindset of a Major League Baseball player whenever I'm in sales. And a Major League Baseball player that is batting an average of 300 is like in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's right? Hitting 30%.
Right.
For those of you that don't know what 300 is.
Which means...
3 out of 10 sales.
Which means 7 out of 10 times at the plate, he's striking out.
He's not striking out, but he's getting out.
He's getting out.
Yeah.
Right.
Ground out, fly out, strike out, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's a guy that is happy to connect and hit the ball and get on base. Right. And so
I'm interested to see where you go with this.
What I'm getting at is that's a guy who knows that if I can do better than 20%, like I'm in the major leagues, and if I can get into the upper 20s of percents, I'm in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Right. And so,
well,
we need to take that same adage in the sales world. And if anything, our adage, our sales might even be a little less than that. But in other words, we need to be okay being told no.
Yeah.
These Major League Baseball players are getting paid millions of dollars to strike out 70% of the time. To not get on base 70% of the time.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Well, it's because hitting a round ball with a round bat's really tough.
It's the hardest thing to do in sports.
I mean, you know what? That's a topic for another day, but it's one of the hardest things.
You talk to like Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders, the guys that have played multiple sports.
Well, that's where I got round ball with round bats from George Brett.
Yeah.
One of the greatest hitters of all time.
They'll all tell you the hardest thing to do in sports is to hit a baseball pitched by a major league pitcher.
Yeah.
So.
When I was a kid and like we would go and actually like have real guys throw at 80 miles an hour, it's hard to even see the ball.
Yeah.
Like your vision has to be insane.
You go to those batting cages and you turn it all the way up as a kid.
Yeah. Like no, we could do all those. Yeah. Yeah, it's like you can barely see the ball.
Yeah.
Like your vision has to be insane. Your hand eyes got to be insane.
It's crazy.
It is what it is.
And so
you got to be legit.
But yet here we are, we're out there selling, you know, plumbing repairs and sewer lines and water lines and furnaces and air conditioners and full panel swap outs if you're an electrician or irrigation systems or whatever the case may be, house cleaning, auto repair, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And we're like, I'm afraid to follow up. I'm afraid to call that customer that I gave a bid to last week. And what if they say no? Or what if they say they went with somebody else? Or what if they say, don't call me again? Like,
who cares?
Big deal.
Well, first off, you got to get over your pride. Like, just deal with it.
Right.
Like just deal with it. Like in the HVAC world, and I don't want to pull you off topic, but like in the HVAC world, it's huge. Like you go out and you bid a job and you give them 3 options, 2 options, 1 option, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. And then they say, well, we're getting other bids. Okay. Like that never bothered me.
Right.
Like, okay, that's great. I would encourage people that I knew were on the fence to do that.
Right.
Because I knew I was going to be competitive, right? But if you don't hear from them the next day, like my rule was always give them that day.
Yeah.
And then call the next day. Late the next day.
Yep.
Hey, just check in to see if you got those other bids. No, I haven't. I'm going to do it. Okay. No big deal. When you do, let me know. They never call.
I know.
You call the next day and you ask the same damn question.
Yep.
Yeah, I did get those bids and I'm still on the fence because of most of the time it was because of X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
Now you have another sales opportunity.
Yep.
In the HVAC business, it's huge.
Yeah.
Like you have got to follow up, especially on changeouts and things like that. Like if you're not getting that sale right out of the gate, 25% of the time you're getting that sale on follow-up.
Yeah.
But the guys that don't even do it, like I'm like what you were saying earlier, I'm amazed by the guys that won't even do it.
Yeah.
And all it is, you don't have to drive to their house.
No.
All you have to do is
call them, text them.
Call them.
Yeah.
And this is like this is the dating thing. Well, I don't want to call her. Why? Or I don't want to go up to her and ask her to dance. Why?
Yeah. What's the worst that can happen? They say no.
She's going to say no. Oh my God, are you going to burst into flames? Like, dude.
Wait till you get married. She's going to say no a lot. I'm just saying.
like, I'm super persistent, so that doesn't happen to me a lot, but that's why
I was... Your follow-up game is strong.
My follow-up game is strong as shit. Like, I am super persistent. And I will say, like, I actually wrote that down. I was going to say that earlier. Like, to be persistent in the sales world is a gift.
Yeah.
And if you can convince yourself to be a persistent person with pushing sales without being pushy...
Yeah.
You can double your game.
Yeah.
Easily double your game.
Well, and some of you guys have like married way out of your league. And some of our listeners to this show, like I'm just going to say, like the guys in Tradewinds.
Oh God. Some of them guys.
They've got some beautiful wives, right? And so it's like.
I tell them all the time. I know I come off like a dick. Like I'm like dude, do you realize she's like fucking way too hot for you, right?
Right. And it's like.
Just look at me. Yeah, you're right. And then you think about it. They're great salesmen.
Right.
Like he sold himself to her.
Right.
And I'm looking at him and I'm like, dude. And then I'm looking at her and I'm like, damn.
Now use those same skills to sell yourself to the customer. Yeah. Right. You did it once.
I give him mad props. Get it, bro. Right. Like get what you get.
Right.
Like, damn.
And so use those same skills to sell the customer.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do. And so I was at a marketing conference this last week.
Was that last week you went?
Yeah. And there was a speaker there. His name's... oh my gosh, my mind just went blank.
Andrew Wilson.
The reason my mind went blank is because he used to go by Drewby Wilson. But he
that's
got,
a weird switch.
Well, so his drug dealer name when he was a young kid was Drewby. And so that was his Facebook name for a long time.
I don't even know what to say.
Like, he was a young kid.
Where are you finding these guys?
But then he went to go get Facebook verified and you have to use your real name. Can't use a nickname.
No.
Like I'm surprised Facebook lets me use Mitch because my legal name is Mitchell Allen. And so, man, I feel like I'm in trouble all of a sudden.
I love it. I love middle name and motherfuckers.
Anyway, Andrew Wilson or Drewby, he runs a company called Call the Damn Leads. And his
Call the Damn Leads is the name of the company?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And
that's
basically
great.
His whole company centers around the fact of call the fucking leads.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it takes to get the FU money. Like he literally has a slide. I've got it pulled up on my phone.
Stop. Like
he's got a slide on his presentation that says the FU money comes from follow up.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And so if you want fuck you money, start following up. Right?
Man, I'm rubbing business, off on you. Lots of F bombs today from Mitch.
your business might be doing okay. Just imagine what it'll do when you start following up and start closing all those opportunities that you'd rather walk away from because it's a little uncomfortable to call them.
Well, just think about like if you followed up with everyone you didn't get and then got 10% of those,
yep.
What that would do to your bottom line revenue.
Right.
Like it's a huge number,
right.
Even at 10%. If you got one out of every 10 you followed up with.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I mean, come on. And
yeah.
I know that lots of guys, they're scared. Oh, they're going to tell me no. A lot of it's just laziness. It's just being lazy.
Yeah.
It is just being lazy. I called some of the guys out in the group for this on Monday. And it was an accident. I didn't know where my Monday motivational was going. But it's like, you guys realize you're not getting calls because you're just not doing what you're supposed to be doing, right? And
right.
It's just, like, it's just laziness. And we as, I don't want to say business owners, just really as people in general, like, it's easy for us to be lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's easy to sit on the couch. It's easy to say I'm busy doing paperwork and I don't have time for that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's hard to motivate yourself to get to the next level.
To go do the uncomfortable thing.
Yeah. It's not natural. What do we talk about in Tradewinds all the time? It's about being uncomfortable.
Yeah, putting yourself in uncomfortable situations.
Yeah, and forcing yourself to be better than you are. Like, that's just, if you want to be great and you want to be successful, that's just what you have to do.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
Yep.
You got to be uncomfortable. Get after it.
Yeah.
Like, there is a small number, like for you, it's not uncomfortable because you don't care and you're a robot and you're weird. I don't know what it is about you. But, like, some people are just that way.
Yeah.
And that's great. Good for them. That's awesome. But the majority of us are not.
Right. So
he's
got the way that he recommends to do it is to break your leads down into four groups. You've got new leads, you got hot leads, you got cold leads, and you got dead leads. And he's following up on all four of those categories.
What's an example of each of those?
So
I know what a new lead is.
Yeah, a new lead is obviously somebody that's come in and you haven't even talked to yet.
Yeah.
A hot lead is somebody that says, I'm buying a new thing,
yeah,
but I'm getting bids.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a hot lead.
That's a hot lead. A cold lead would be somebody that's like, maybe you pitched them an idea that they weren't ready for. And so now you've planted the seed that they need this new thing, but they aren't really ready to buy. They haven't told you no.
Yeah.
But they haven't told anybody yes yet.
Okay.
So that's a cold lead.
Gotcha.
A dead lead is somebody that's just gone silent on you.
Yeah.
Okay.
They won't answer the phone or have told you no.
Yep.
Okay.
And so.
Good clarification, sir.
New leads. You want to follow up on day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 10, 15, 21, and 28.
I'm sorry. Say that slower one more time. I did not know that after you were going with that.
In other words, new leads follow up every day for a week and then follow up every 5 days is basically okay. The way you want to do that, right?
Okay. That's better said.
How do you follow up with them? You call them, you text them, you email them, you smoke signal. I don't care. Find some way to get in front of them. Facebook Messenger, phone call.
That's good.
Egg their house.
Egg their house, leave them a door hanger. Like, it depends on the type of business that you're doing.
Of course.
Okay.
That's good. What's the matter with you, bro?
If no response after 30 days, you move them to the cold lead section. Okay.
Okay. Not hot, a dead lead because you haven't heard lead. From them. Cold
yep,
lead.
Cold Got lead.
It. Okay.
Hot leads. Okay. These are people that are buyers. They just haven't settled on a person yet.
Every day, baby.
You're still following up days 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 15, 21, 28.
Okay. Same schedule.
Very similar.
Okay.
You're going to follow up with their preferred method of contact initially. And then after no response, you're going to switch it up.
You're okay? going to go to their house.
So if their preferred method of contact is texting, now you're going to call them or now you're going to email them.
Yeah.
Or now you're going to Facebook message them or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're trying to make contact.
If no response after 30 days, move them to cold leads.
Okay.
Cold leads, you follow up once a month. And how do you contact them? You put them into some sort of standardized drip sequence. Okay. Now, a drip sequence.
What?
That's all the chain necklaces.
No.
Oh, man, I love me a good chain necklace.
A drip sequence would be some form of standardized, like you could move customers into this category in a lot of CRMs that you use. And there's even like adders that you can like add on features you can put onto CRMs that will do this for you. Like HubSpot and Go High Level are a couple. These are really expensive, but they're options. Or you could just like manually do this, but
you're
going to
make a spreadsheet.
You're
going to
move people into
it.
The cold lead yeah. section. And then you're gonna all cold leads, they get once monthly email or text message from you or something. And it's going to be somewhat standardized and it's going to be somewhat robotic. It's going to be like some pre-scripted thing. Hey, this is Mitch from Smedley Plumbing. Just checking up with you and see if you'd made a decision on what we talked about. Like, I could automate that sequence and put all of my cold leads into that sequence.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if I talk about a sewer, a water heater, a job application. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Mitch with Smedley Plumbing. Just wondering if you'd made a decision on what we talked about. All cold leads are the same, right?
Okay.
So then you have dead leads. Dead lead. Oh, crap. Dead leads are people that have ghosted you.
Easy, easy, man. You went to instant panic mode there.
Well, I tapped my phone and lost my picture.
Oh,
okay.
Boo.
Here we go. Dead leads. You're following up every 3 to 6 months. Okay, these are people that are probably hating your guts by now, but by now you're over it and you're okay with messaging people that hate your guts.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yep.
So at you go to sell someone a sewer. Sewer is a bad thing for you. What would be a good example for you?
Tankless water heater.
Tankless water heater.
Okay.
They wanted a tankless water heater, but their regular water heater works. They're just...
Yep.
Okay. At what point do you stop because you don't want to piss them off so bad that you ruin all other plumbing service because now they hate your guts?
You stop when they tell you to remove you from their list.
That being said,
mm-hmm.
they are mad at you before that.
Some.
So, I know.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're a plumbing contractor.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be there for all their other needs,
yep.
not just the tankless.
Yeah.
So like for you, what would that be? One time? 3 months?
I would
6 months and that's it?
I would stay the course and follow up every 3 to 6 months. And as Andrew says, until they buy or until they die. or until they ask you to remove them from your list.
My point is, if they ask you to remove them from your list, mm-hmm. after 6 months, you may have made them mad enough that they don't call you for any of their other plumbing needs.
True.
Okay.
That's possible.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're in the plumbing industry, like, I would say on dead leads, three months, 6 months, stop calling them.
Yeah.
Like, there are certain things that you can beat to death and certain industries that you can. HVAC is kind of one of those, mm-hmm. because you're not servicing their whole house. You're servicing one thing in their home.
Right.
As a plumber, there are a lot of opportunities in that home, and you don't want to make them, you don't want to build animosity towards yourself through that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, here's the flip side though, with the follow-up, and what you're hitting on is the fear everyone has. I don't want to make them upset. I don't want to come off too strong. Right. And
well, you don't want to damage any other sales you could get in the future.
Right.
Like, on certain things, that's impossible. On HVAC, it's impossible. You can't do it. On plumbing, it's very possible.
Yeah.
To lose customers that way when you're way over the top.
Yeah.
That's why I bring it up.
I would, well,
it's a good thing to think about.
Sending somebody a message every 3 to 6 months, I would not say is way over the top. Now, if you're still messaging them every day for 6 months straight, obviously that's over the top.
That's why I'm bringing
that's
it
like
up.
Preteen, like dating style. Like, she won't text me back.
Yeah, it's Austin at 21.
So,
I think what Mitch is going to say too is like, if they're not going to buy from you on that, then they're probably not going to be your customer anyway.
Well, part of it's that, but also like for the same reason that we want people to have a closing rate, that we want guys to make sales on 70 to 80% of the calls that they run. Well, that means that we know 20 to 30% of the calls you run, people are going to say, thanks, but no thanks. Your prices are too high.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it might not just be too high. They just mean you stink. And
Or maybe they don't like you, right?
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's going to be price. They're going to think you're priced a little too high. And that's what we teach in TradeWinds, is that if your closing rate is over 80%, you need to raise your prices, because you need a certain amount of people telling you no in order to verify that your price is right where it needs to be. And so if you're closing 100% of your calls, that means you're pricing yourself too cheap. If you're worried that you're going to upset 100% of the people you're following up with, that means you're not following up enough. And the reason I say that is because once you start a strong follow-up game, like, the only people that say exactly what you're saying are the people that do not follow up. And these are all their excuses as to why, right?
Yeah.
And so once you start following up with people, you'll realize, like, man, I followed up with like 150 people today and only one of them asked to remove me from the list or to not call them anymore. Well, one out of 150, I'm cool with that. Keep in mind, these are 150 people that before your follow-up game,
you were already
written off anyway. They're not buying, right? And so now that you've already written them off, why are you so afraid that they're going to write you off? And they're not really writing you off. They're just unsubscribing from your email list, or they're texting stop on your text messenger campaign, or they're telling you, I'll call you back when I'm ready, right? Please don't call me anymore.
Cool. Stop calling me, motherfucker.
I mean, I've been turned
down. You're creeping me out, man.
I've been turned down by the smoking hot chick at the bar I don't know how many times.
Dude, do you want to get into a whole thing? I've seen it. It's sad.
Now, this is not recent. I'm just saying.
Dude,
been
Mitch.
Happily married for 16 years now.
We're going to talk about it. Mitch used to be, we used to call him the king. What was it? God, it's going to make me blank. It's going to make me mad. He would literally ask every girl out in the bar on the same night.
The shotgun approach,
dude, he would not even care. He would just literally go, you could see him. One, nope. That girl's hot. Next. That girl's hot. Next. Until one would say, yeah.
Yeah.
Either number or date that night or what. Like, I can't remember what we called you, but like.
Man whore.
He was. He was fearless. He literally gave no Fs. It was just, I'm playing a numbers game.
Yep.
Like, maybe that's what's helped you in sales. Like
he
just
had stats in his
just,
head.
Yeah. He was just literally, it was just boom, boom, boom.
You know what they,
boom, boom, until one said yes.
So the,
it was amazingly awful to watch.
So the older chicks that are always trying to get the guys at the bar, you call those cougars, right?
Yeah.
You know what they call a guy version of that?
No.
A manther.
I just called him a creeper, but yeah, I mean, yeah, okay.
It's kind of the same thing.
A manther. It's probably, that's great.
Guy's probably his name's Chad. I don't
God,
know.
If Janine ever leaves me, that's going to be me. Yeah. I'm going to look young and just be at the bar.
Yep.
Well, there's like mindsets of like on sales, if you have the person who gets rejected and then they think they have the positive mindset that says, I'm one step closer to getting the lead.
Yeah.
Versus the guy who thinks negatively and he's like, oh, that's one more person that told me no. I'm so depressed. Yeah. I'm upset or whatever.
I'm depressed that I can't remember what we used to call you. That's going to bug me. That's going to bug me all night.
You'll think of it like 4 a.m. and text them.
I will. Probably. If I think of it, I will. I'll be like, hey, I remember what it was.
But I mean, ultimately, you go back to your old school dating days and you had no fear you would talk to anybody, right? Or maybe you had fear and maybe that's why you are scared to follow up. I don't know. Like, I had no fear I would talk to anybody because what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, let me tell you now.
I'm not overbearing. I'm not handsy. I'm not saying vulgar things. Like, I'm being polite. I'm being cordial. But I don't know if they don't like me unless I go talk to them.
Yeah, it was.
And so I'd go talk to them. Great. I'd find out real quick they don't like me. They'd say no. And I'd be like, cool, on to the next one.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it was a numbers game now, for Mitch back in the day.
Now, if we're going to go closing percentage of girls I've talked to girls I closed, that number is probably pretty low.
That's a low percentage.
However, if we're going to go closing percentage of nights I went out versus closing opportunities, that number is pretty high. So I can say that as a happily married man of 16 years.
Maybe. I'll give that one to you. Yeah.
So.
Oh, man.
But ultimately, guys, the FU money comes from the follow-up. So, so step up your follow-up game and get out of your comfort zone. Go to every call you didn't sell over the last 3 weeks. And call them up. Send them a text message.
Yeah.
Say, hey, this is so-and-so with such-and-such company.
Yeah.
Just checking to see if you made a decision on that thing that we talked about, whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
And if you're going through your notes and you sell generators or, you know, whatever, just checking to see if you made a decision on that backup generator or that new swimming pool or that furnace or that air conditioner or the water heater or the sewer or the electrical panel or whatever it is that you do. Just checking to see if you picked a home cleaner yet, because I've got an opening next Friday and I would love to fit you in.
Yeah.
Right?
Like we talked about earlier, what are they going to say? No.
Right.
No, thank you. Okay. Well, on to the next.
And
like, it doesn't matter.
You'd be amazed how many people. So this kind of goes along the lines with the no soliciting signs. Anytime I walk up to a door to ring a doorbell on a service call with a no soliciting sign, I get excited. Because what I've learned is that people with no soliciting signs, they don't want their privacy. Those people have a hard time saying no. And they put the no soliciting sign up as a defensive move. Like, please don't try to sell me anything because I'm going to say yes.
Oh, that's
I have a hard time saying
that's
no.
Interesting thing.
And so
to
I'm going to try to stop you from even ringing. They don't want the discomfort of telling you no. And so they put the sign up saying, please don't ring my doorbell because I don't want to have to tell you no.
That's an interesting way to think about it. Because I love telling people to fuck off.
I've had the opposite experience of that, but I mean, that was a long time ago. So.
Well, and it's different. So I will say you were selling, what were you selling? Like
I was,
lawn care.
Lawn care, yeah. People would open and be like, did you not see the sign?
Right.
Get out of here.
Now that is
get
true.
Get out of here, you son of a bitch.
That is true door-to-door sales, right? Yeah. And they're using the sign as a shield at that point. Mm. I can't tell you no. Don't even start with your spiel. I got a sign. Follow the sign, right? Mm-hmm. Now, in our case, we were invited to the home because they had a plumbing issue and they called us and booked a service call. Mm. So if I glance, like I've got perfectly legal for me to, you know, ring the doorbell because they called us there. But if I catch that they have a no soliciting sign, I'll usually step up my game a little bit and level up my options a little bit because I know the true reason why they have that sign. It's not because they want their privacy. It's because they can't say no.
Ooh. Get on Mitch's therapy couch.
Yeah. So, like when I was with Chris and Noah, this is a tiny bit off topic, but it's still plumbing. Chris almost got me. He came out and he's like, yeah, the homeowner said he's getting Papa John's and he just needs you to run in there and tell him what pizza you want. And so I said, Noah, come in. And then he knew it was up, but then Chris was telling me that was just a whole joke.
It was just a joke to get Austin in an awkward situation.
Yeah, he's saying that he did it before, like at a previous job. And
that's
people
brutal.
Go there and be like, yeah, I'll take a pepperoni. And the homeowner's like, what are you doing?
Whoa, I thought pepperoni what?
Everyone said you were ordering pizza, bro.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're a good salesman. If you say, everyone said you were ordering pizza, bro, and then you can talk them into getting pizza.
And the person who's pranking you doesn't
get the
pizza. You're a great salesman.
Yeah, then the person who's pranking you doesn't get the pizza. Like, it just a twist on him.
Yeah.
Let them go get lunch.
And when he comes out, you're like,
yeah.
I want to talk about one more thing before the show's over.
Yeah, just a quick topic. Let's get it.
I want to talk about mergers and acquisitions. So a lot of you guys may... Mergers and acquisitions.
What?
So... There's kind of two or three reasons to let's call it three reasons to start your own company. One is you just want to replace your salary. You don't like being bossed around by anybody. You want to be your own boss and you want to set your own hours and you want to set your own pay and you want to work as hard as you want to work and all of that stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's not really self-employment. That's kind of like owning your job, but it's still a step up from being employed. It's still substantially harder than being employed. You'll probably make more, but you will definitely have a lot more risk and a lot more headaches, right? Step two would be you're starting a business as a lifestyle business, and that would mean you want to replace your salary, but you want a little bit more streamlined security and performance from the business. You want to put teams of people in place that can do things when you're not there.
That's probably where you are now.
Yeah. In that step of things. Yeah.
In the process.
And so that's what's called a lifestyle business, where the business is really just there to fund your lifestyle. It's not really what we would call like a legacy style business. Now, a legacy style business is a business where you've built it up healthy enough with the right people in place and the right management teams and all of the right processes to where that business will live on in your legacy. Long after you're gone, that business could still function.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so,
or it could be you just barely have to check in. All you're doing is you're an investor usually in that type of business. You go in once a month, check everything out, make sure you're still getting your checks.
Yeah.
Back home.
Usually it's not once a month. Usually it's an hour or two a day.
Is it that often? I wouldn't know. I'm not there.
Yeah.
Well, I have no desire to be there.
I'm not there, but ultimately
that's what you want to work towards.
That's kind of what you want to work towards, is to where you've put in the risk, you've put in the time, you've put in the work, you've put in all of the creative side of things to create these positions and to envision the workflow and envision the build out of your team, so that all you do have to do is check in every couple of hours each day and make sure the ship is still on course.
Yeah, and that's what we've, you know, started to tell guys in Tradewinds. And I shouldn't say started, since the beginning. Like, regardless of what your end goal is, that should be where you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
Whether you want to sell it, whether you want to just come in an hour a day, regardless, that's where you should be trying to get to.
Yeah.
Whether you can get there or not is another thing.
Yeah.
But that should be your goal.
Yeah.
Like if you want to retire someday through the business, that's where you've got to be.
Yep. And so what's going to happen is, as soon as you get your business to a decently healthy level, you're going to start being reached out to by merger and acquisition people.
I wasn't sure if you were going to get there for a second. Yeah.
People are going to start connecting with you and contacting you and emailing you and calling you that are with mergers and acquisitions. And what mergers and acquisitions are, those are, some of them are venture capitalist firms. Some of them are just groups of business owners that like to invest in other businesses. Some of them are private equity. Big private equity firms.
Yeah.
And
that's a big thing right now too.
Yeah. The private equity thing is huge.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of different ways to play that, but essentially there are people out there that are looking for turnkey businesses that operate without the owner's direct involvement every day. And they want to go buy those businesses so that they want to invest the money to buy the business, and then they want the profits that come from that business. Right? It's no different than you investing in the stock market and you want your percentage of return. They're doing the same thing by buying businesses. And some of them have bigger pictures at play. In other words, they want to buy your business just for your customer database, and they're going to basically destroy your business, but then they're going to market to all of your customers with their business.
Yeah.
Some of them they want your customer database. They don't want to destroy your business because your business might be good at growing a database of customers. So they're going to buy your business and fund it and run it for a while just to build the customer base. And they're basically just using your business as a springboard for their business.
Yes.
There's who knows why they would want to buy your company, but there's plenty of people out there that do. And so what we want to talk about is what it takes to get your business into a position where somebody would even want to buy it. And a lot of people think, like, there's a guy that I was chatting to about 12 months ago. He has an HVAC company. And
okay.
He's forever and only ever been a one-man shop. He's never once had an employee. He thinks his HVAC company is worth $1 million. I said, how many customers do you have in your database? And he says 386.
Dude, I had 386 in a year. And yeah. I was a one-man shop. What's his revenue?
Under $300,000 a year. And so he's got a business that's bringing in a top-line revenue of under $300,000. Its bottom line revenue at best would be like
$100,000,
$60,000 a year.
It's probably $100,000.
He's HVAC.
Oh, net. Okay.
Net income.
Yeah.
Is maybe at best $60,000 a year. It's probably 80. Closer to 30.
Could be 80.
Maybe.
Just depends.
Yeah. But
that company's only worth $200,000 at most.
Well, he's the only employee of that company. He's got less than 400 customers.
Yeah.
Those customers use the company for him.
Yeah, because they love him.
They love him.
Yeah.
Right?
That was my company. I did way more money than that, but that was my business. They loved me.
What I'm getting at is that guy thinks his business is worth $1 million. He has no reason why to think that other than that's his level of passion in his own business. He doesn't have any like metrics or numbers to back up the $1 million request.
He doesn't have
any
metrics to back that up.
But let's say I were to buy his company and he's no longer in the picture. Do you think any of his 364 customers are ever going to use him again? No. Maybe a small percentage of them.
I would say you could count on maybe 33%.
Maybe.
Like 35%.
Maybe. Right? Yeah. Maybe for one visit.
And if you were a great salesman, maybe more than that. If you're a shitty one, worse.
Yeah.
Like,
or they call you up and whenever it's not that guy that shows up, they're like, well, I'm never calling them again. And so they were a one and done customer for you as the new owners, right?
Yeah.
And so what merger and acquisition people are looking for.
That would be what we call a bad investment.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what merger and acquisition people are looking for is they are looking for somewhat turnkey businesses.
Yeah.
Now, I've talked to a lot of people that have sold their business. And a question I ask every single person that has sold their business is, how many fatal problems did your business have the day it sold? Every single one of them will pause because they're shocked for the question.
Well, they're thinking. They're like,
No. They'll be like, oh my gosh, I'm surprised you thought of that. My business had like three major things wrong with it and they still bought it. Right. And the reason why is because that business owner is so in tune with their business.
Yeah.
Those three things may not have been all that major, but the guy is really good about placing a level of anxiety or a level of importance on those things to get them solved fast. Right. He's making an urgent situation out of them, which is what you want to do.
Of course.
You want to attach urgency to the important things. And so ultimately your business does not have to be perfect for it to sell. I have a buddy of mine literally this week that I've never met this guy in person. He and I have chatted a ton online. Sold his business this week. Because we've chatted so much online, I texted him and I'm like, hey, can you share me some details about the sale? He's like, sure, man. What do you want to know?
I said,
what were your revenue numbers leading up to the sale? 2 years ago, it was 600,000. Or 3 years ago, it was 600,000. 2 years ago, it was 800,000. Last year, it was 1.2 million. Top line revenue.
Okay.
Okay. Top line sales.
Steady growth, right?
Sold his business for $900,000 and he paid a broker. The broker got 10% of the 900,000.
How did he get that much money?
I don't know. Not sure. And it was a lump sum
payment.
That
doesn't help.
I know.
Me or this podcast.
Well, the broker did pretty good.
I mean, no shit.
Paid a broker to do it, right? So, and the broker's cheap. It's only 10%. That's a pretty cheap broker. But
I mean, he obviously had to be making some killer profit.
Could have been.
You said it was HVAC?
Plumbing.
Plumbing?
Yeah.
At 1.3?
1.2. Sold it for 900,000. Yeah.
Even if his profit margin was 30%.
Yeah, your net profit margin at that's probably not 30.
I know. My point is, even if it's 30 and they're given 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then he,
that's
so
also
he,
what we call a bad investment.
He got a lump sum payment.
I mean, shit.
He got a lump sum payment out of the deal. And then they even hired him on to manage the business under their ownership. So, and yeah, and some of that may be, some of that may be contractually obligated. Some of that may be stay on for a year to help ease the changeover, you know,
year and a half.
But ultimately he got his lump sum payment, because a lot of times the way these merger and acquisition companies work, especially private equity. All right. So you've newly started your company and you're trying to pinch pennies. However, you don't realize the biggest thing that's hurting you right now is not gathering all of your information into one spot and making it super efficient for you to use. So the answer is Field Pulse. It gets you off of paper tickets. It gets you off of all of that crazy office work at the end of the day and reconciling all that stuff. And it lets you organize everything with ease. It puts it all into the computer. It actually puts it all into the cloud. So it's not even putting it on your computer. And it lets you organize your customers. It lets you organize all of your service calls. Heck, it'll even route you to your service call. And the best part is, even after all of that, you'll probably realize about a 100% growth in your business just in the first year of using Field Pulse. So if you'd like to check out Field Pulse and see what great looks like, click on the link in the description of this show.
Dude, that's why I keep saying it. That's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
It's a good amazing
deal. It's a good deal.
You guys, and that's guys why I'm are not going to get guys are not going to get that.
Well, that's why I'm talking about it, is because I want to let guys know what's out there and what's available. Private equity companies are typically going to want to see you doing $1 million in net profit per year before they'll be interested in you. Now, these are big, big private equity companies. Yeah. PE firms are big. And for them and all the legwork that they have to go through to buy a company, for unless you're net profiting $1 million a year, they don't really like that, right? Now, in the grand scheme of things, industry-leading net profit is 20%. So to net profit $1 million a year, you'd have to have $5 million in top line revenue.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that's probably the floor of where you would be. You're realistically probably going to be a $6 to $8 million company to net profit $1 million.
You're making me do a lot of math in my head. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in other words, PE companies want you to be a $6 to $8 million company at a 20% net before they buy you.
Yeah.
But
and you have to be, it has to be in a position where all they do is pay you and you walk away.
Well, that's another thing with PE firms.
It's got to be turnkey for them, or they don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right. Now, here's the flip side on the PE firms. The private equity firms are going to want to see $1 million in EBITDA, but they're going to pay you the most multiple. They're going to give you an 8 or a 10X multiple. Okay. So what that means is you have a company doing, let's say, $8 million a year in top line revenue, and you're net profiting $1 million a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm giving you $8 million.
They're going to give you a 10X multiple on your net profit, which means they're going to give you $10 million for your $8 million annual sales company. Okay. But here's how they do it. They'll give you like half down. They'll say, we'll give you $5 million for your $8 million company. And then if you stay on for 3 years and you continue this growth that you're doing, you'll get another $5 million at the end of the 3 years.
Yeah.
Right. And basically, in those situations, the odds of you getting that second payment are very, very slim, because the PE firm comes in and they start messing with things and they start controlling the company, because now they own it. Mm-hmm. So they start controlling the company, and now they prohibit you from doing the things that it would take to hit their goals.
Yeah. It's like NFL salary kind of deal.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're 100% right. Like, that's one of those
scenes.
I've
seen this firsthand.
That's one of those things where you say, no, I'll take the 7 or the 8, and then I'll help you for a year transition, but then I'm out. Like, don't let them bait you into something crazy. Now, I will say, like, if Mitch calls me tomorrow, and if Mitch calls me 3 years from now and he's like, hey, we're doing $1 million of profit a year, blah, blah, blah. This company came in and they want to give me 7.5 and I got to stay on for 6 months. What do you think I should do? I tell Mitch, take the damn money.
Yeah.
Like, I take the money.
Yeah.
Like,
and
you
here's why you take the money.
You invest that money.
Because right now you're working a full year for $1 million in net profit.
Yeah.
Whereas these guys have an offer on the table for you to get 7 years of hard work.
You know what 5% at $7.5 million is
right.
After you invest it is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a lot of fucking
7
money.
7 years of your
nothing.
Hard work, and all you have to do is sign on the dotted line and sell them your company,
you
right?
You take the damn money.
And then you go invest that money and you get better returns on
I
it than
guys,
you would for your million.
I think guys get hung up too. And I get this because, like, I'm an emotional person and I get attached to things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's be honest, 3 years from now, you've put like your entire soul into Smedley Plumbing.
Well, I already have, but yeah.
God damn it, Mitch. You know what I'm talking about. But like, you know what I mean? And then that's why guys don't sell when they do get a good offer, because they just literally, they either can't emotionally or they just can't mentally, because they don't want to let go of what they've built.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't want to get into like a whole sociological thing, but like the whole reason you were doing it in the first place was to get that check. Like, let's be, you're trying to build family legacy. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Like, even if you want to invest that money and go on to something else, like, you have the money to now level up again.
Yeah.
You're not starting from zero. Yep. Take the money.
Well, and so it used to be like when you and I were growing up, David and I are in our 40s. So we were growing up strong in the 90s, right? 90s, early 2000s.
Early aughts.
And back then.
As the young kids say.
Back then, if you had $1 million, that was a lot of money.
Yeah. It ain't shit now.
$1 million ain't shit now, no. Right? Now, don't get me wrong. It's still a lot of money. But back then, you could retire on $1 million.
Yeah.
And now it'd probably take five.
Like for us, like if you and I retire at 55, 58,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have two. You're going to have
oh, God,
two.
I need more than that.
Now, you're going to have two, and then everything you own has to be paid. Like, my whole goal is I got to have two in investments. Everything I own has to be paid for, and you got to have 250 in the bank to withstand the ups and downs of the market.
Yep.
So that you don't have to pull off of that too.
Yeah, you never want to touch the neg.
Yeah,
so it
really, like when the market tanks, you live off the 250 and you're not really touching that other money. Like, I don't want to get in a whole financial thing here,
but that's, I get it.
Like, that's what it's going to realistically. And that's if you're getting Social Security on top of that.
Yeah, you got 250 in liquid.
Yeah.
You got 2 million in non-liquid.
Yeah.
And that's
paying you.
You're trying to live off the proceeds from the 2 million, but if the proceeds from the 2 million tank,
yeah,
then you can live off the 250 liquid until the proceeds from the 2 million kick back on.
Yeah. Now, and that's 20 years from now. Let's be honest. That's 20 years. So inflation by then is going to be like, it sounds bad now. It's going to be realistic.
Well, and what's crazy is it's really not that bad. Right?
Oh, it's awful so compared to what it used to be, but it's bad. Like, but it's, how do I say this? It's bad but doable. How about that?
So, like, I could probably, I mean, it's hard to say I could do this because the offer's never been there, but I could probably sell my company for $1 million. Looking at the branding, looking at the market share that we have, looking at the size of our company and the power that our company has, looking at the data that we own, because that's another thing that merger and acquisitions companies want is data.
And
the amount of data that we have from all of our customers and our CRM.
It, like, if you had asked me, I would have said 750. So I don't think that's
right. Well, so the example that I gave you, they did 1.2 and sold for 900,000.
That's also an anomaly.
It is, but it shows that they're out there.
They are.
Right.
And I'm not saying it's not possible.
And so
let me ask you a question. If someone came to you tomorrow and said, I'm going to give you $1 million, would you take it?
I'd have a conversation with them. I don't know if I take it.
I'm asking you if you take it. I know you're having the conversation. If someone calls you and says, Mitch, we want to give you 750, you're having the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
But like if they can write the check out, give it to you, and they're like, there you go, buddy. You want to sign? There's like, do you take it? It's $1 million.
It would be really hard.
That's on the fence for me. Like, well, it would be on the fence for me.
Part of it's on the fence, but also part of it is like, what is the connection after that? Because they're all going to have these performance incentives and these contractual obligations. So like,
okay, $1 million and you have to stay on for a year.
$1 million. Like, how long do you have to stay on? What's your involvement there? What's your risk? Is there a performance incentive at the end? What's your non-compete? Can you start up a similar business in the similar industry in this area or anywhere in the nation?
First off, Dave would start a plumbing company and Mitch would just own it.
I'm just saying.
That's exactly what would happen.
And
we'd run those shitheads out of business.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what would happen.
Non-competes don't mean diddly when it comes to employees moving from one company to another.
No.
Non-competes are absolutely enforced whenever it comes to you selling a company and then starting a competing company against the person you just sold to.
Dave started it.
And the reason why they're
come
enforced,
and get me, baby.
The reason why they're enforced is if that company had the millions of dollars to buy you out, they have the millions of dollars to sue your ass in court.
Yeah.
Whereas employees, like, it's a $100,000 employee. Yeah. That nobody's going to go to court over a $100,000 employee. They're just going to go find another one.
You're right. I also have a sledgehammer and 5 gallons of gas. We'll see how long they want to push it. You know what I mean? Like we, everyone could push. Yeah. Like, it's just, you have different ways when you're broke, you know?
So
that's what it is.
Ultimately,
you gotta light someone's house on fire.
Ultimately, what you're looking for, if you want to go the M&A route,
I'm kidding.
Looking for is you want to have processes in place to where the team knows what to do without having to involve you every day. You want to have team members in place that do all the tasks in the company without your day-to-day involvement. And you want to have a managerial staff in place to where when somebody comes in and buys you out, they don't have to replace you as the manager, right? Yeah.
And if you think that like that's you, but then you think I'm going to take a 2-week vacation and you know that you can't, that's not you.
Right.
Like if you can't be gone for 2 weeks, you got a long way to go.
Right.
If you think you could be gone for a month in Italy and that thing wouldn't miss a beat, you're on the right track.
Right. And I mean, it's still, you might have somebody call and check in. You might have somebody give you some details. You might have somebody fill you in on what happened yesterday or whatever. But for the large part, the event is moving forward. Calls are being handled. Calls are being ran. Sales are being made. Money is being deposited. All of those things without your involvement.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and let's be honest, and I don't want to like kiss your ass here. Like when we went to Breckenridge, we were gone a week. You were on the phone like 2 times.
Yeah.
And everything went smooth.
Yeah.
Could you do that for 3 weeks? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe.
You know, maybe.
It just depends. It's just,
but the point is, if you're not working towards that,
yeah,
that's the wrong goal to have. Like, you should be, whether you want to sell, whether you want to get out, whether you want to whatever, that's the goal to be working towards. If you want to own that thing until you're 75 because you love it and want to be rich from making money off of it, you still have to get to that point.
Well,
so that you can travel, so that you can be with your family and do all those things and just be getting checks.
Yeah.
Whether you sell it or not.
And that is where kind of we're getting to with it. Like, a lot of people are like, screw PE, screw investors. I'm owning this thing for life. This is my family legacy.
It's still the goal. You still have to do the same thing.
Yeah. Like, how better to set your family legacy up than to set it up as a sellable business that M&A people would love to talk to you about. And you just say, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
And you keep running. Like, the reason they want to talk to you about it is because they've watched you online. They've seen your online presence. They like your branding. They like your Google reviews.
Yeah.
You seem to have a good grasp of what's going on. Your company seems to be of the right size. And then they talk with you and find out that you're largely removed from the day-to-day operations. Things work really well, even when you're not there. That's a great conversation to have, even if you tell them no. And here's why. Because that means your business is fairly easy to run. It's probably a fairly enjoyable business to own.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of people that start these businesses and they don't do a very good job of hiring teams of people to help them. And they don't do a very good job of delegating. And now they have 10 times the responsibilities for twice the pay.
And I don't want to get into the whole thing, but a lot of that is because those people can't let go.
Yeah.
And they can't hire managers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's usually the problem there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into, like, you know, bad things, but like, if you're building towards that and you are 65 and then you do die, your family's selling that thing and going to be rich. Okay.
Yeah.
So it needs to be in that position.
Yeah.
I mean, at that age, at 65, you're not on term life anymore. You know what I mean? You're just, your legacy is the business.
Yeah.
And you have those conversations, obviously, not to be morbid about, hey, if I die and something happens, you need, this is the amount of money you should be looking for. This is the plan.
Yep.
When I'm gone, like, these are the people you reach out to.
Dude.
Regardless of whether you want to sell or not.
This is how seriously I took it with my business. Once we got our business up and rolling, I got myself $1 million life insurance policy personally. We got Danielle like either a 500 or a 750 personally. They wouldn't give her $1 million.
She doesn't do anything.
They flat out said her life isn't worth $1 million. I'm like, wow, that's kind of cold.
It's not cold. It's just like, let's be honest, like, not to get into a whole thing, but like, people produce value in their life and it is a monetary.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, and she's. Yep. I love your wife. She's not doing it. She ain't doing nothing. Like,
well,
She's not doing $1 million worth of work. Exactly. How about that? That's what I meant. I'm sorry if that sounded bad. And that's not how I meant it.
It's a common thing that comes from the stay-at-home mom position. There's a lot of stay-at-home moms that do not qualify for $1 million policy because they don't have $1 million in value.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a morbid way of thinking about it because, like, your stay-at-home mom's absolutely worth $1 million policy, but it's to the insurance people, it's not. No. Right.
Yeah. And that is a real thing.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about serious insurance.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and then in addition to those, I bought a corporate life insurance policy that the business pays for. It's a $3 million policy on me. Yeah. So what that means is if I die,
gets an influx.
My wife gets $1 million in her bank account from my life insurance policy.
She'll blow through that shit in 2 years.
The, the business gets $3 million in its bank account when I die.
Yeah.
It's owned by the business. The business, the policy is paid for by the business. So the business gets the cash infusion, right? So the idea of that is, here's boatloads of cash to float the business, to hire the right consultants, to bring the right people in, to now sell the business so that my wife can live off the proceeds of the sale of the business.
Yeah, and people don't think about, like, if Mitch were to die tomorrow, heaven forbid, like, those guys still need paychecks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There are other aspects going on other than Mitch being gone.
Yeah.
Like it, and that is just like, that's the cold kind of reality of where things are. Those guys got to, like, obviously there would probably be a week or two of it shut down. Those guys are still getting paychecks for everything to regroup, for Danielle to call me and say, what do you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if things haven't been worked out before, you know, all that kind of stuff. And those are real things that need to happen, especially when your business starts doing serious money. It's so weird you brought that up. Your dad and I are supposed to have a talk about, we're going to do the same thing in Tradewinds.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to be that much money, but it's going to be enough money so that if I got hit by a bus, you would have time to say, okay, what do I want to do? Do I want to fold this up? Do I think I could replace Dave? We obviously know the answer is no, but like, you
three,
know what
3 days later,
you know what I mean? And hey, I found a guy.
Hey,
on
Austin,
the,
you got a promotion.
I found. But it's, you know, there'll be one for both of us. So like, you know, so that the guys that are invested in the group, I don't have to call them and say, hey, we're shutting this down because I don't know what to do.
Because Mitch died or
and
Dave
died.
And there's
no influx of cash. And I'm panicked day three, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like, so
the money,
you know,
is
we
a
talk
bridge
about,
to serenity.
We talk about being prepared before you start your business. This is one of those things, and life insurance and all that kind of stuff is being prepared while you're in business for when or if something horrible does happen.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, if you're in a business with a few employees, it's not about you. It's not about your family. It's about their families too.
Yeah.
And you can't just, you do not want to have to call your five, how many guys you got? Three, five, I don't know. I can't keep track of what you do.
10 employees.
10 employees. You don't want to call them all up and say, hey guys, sorry, no checks this week.
Yeah.
Like
Mitch
that's,
died.
Yeah, that's, you don't want to have to do that. Like that's just a dick move. You owe it to, we talked about it today, you owe it to your employees to keep your board full for them to get calls. You owe it to them for the business to be prepared if something catastrophic were to happen.
Right.
Gets in a Segway accident.
Yeah.
Gets in
Take a Segway off the
I
cliff.
Buy Mitch a Segway with no brakes and it, or, you know, no lean back, and he just drives it off the fucking
cliff.
That
needs to go in our sayings on the podcast.
Maybe we will do
Take
that.
Take a Segway off a cliff.
Yeah.
Take a long Segway ride off a short
cliff.
We
have a lot of Segways off of cliffs in this podcast, especially episode 1 through 50.
Yeah.
And I'm captain of most of them.
Yeah.
Yes, you are. You are. You
Austin's
drive
very
it
proud of
full
his,
speed
his
right off of the
derail
cliff.
Abilities.
Yeah. I've done really
You've
well.
You've gotten
for
a lot better,
time.
Buddy.
Yep.
It's one of those things. There's a learning curve.
Yeah.
There's a learning curve. You got to figure it out.
Yeah. Just, you know.
We don't hate you for it.
Yeah. Let me funny. I replace
some of the people that listen do.
But. I replace you after you die on a podcast and you just hear Mitch. Also, look up on Google of how Dave died.
Yeah.
Segway.
He'd never make it.
No.
He'd never make it. Wrap us up, Mitch. Good
so
show, buddy.
That's going to wrap us up for the show. If this show brought you any questions or anything like that, feel free to email us. You can reach us several different ways. Mitch at tradewinsconsulting.com. That's WINS, no D. David@tradewindsconsulting.com.
Last time I put my phone number out, I got two texts. So I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, don't do that again. And if you guys want to know the episode number with David's phone number in it, you just have to listen to them all. Sorry.
Yes. They were Tradewinds guys, but
yeah,
they at like one was like at 1 a.m. Hey,
yeah.
Don't leave your number out on the thing. I was like, dude, come on, brother. What are you killing me, man?
So, another way you can get a hold of us is you can just do askmitch@mitchsmedley.com. Either which way we will get your questions. You can also find us on Facebook, and then message us there.
Yeah.
So, if this show brought you any questions or anything like that, feel free to reach out. We love answering questions. And by the way, we're going to close the show out on a really cool high note.
Oh, we are. Are we?
Yep. I'm going to read an email that we got from a listener. This is cool. He says, "Hey, Void team."
Oh, Austin's in here.
Austin's okay. In here.
Boom.
"New Zealand-based plumber here, and I wanted to give you a big thank you, and I thought you would like the encouragement, as you have made an impact on one of the far corners of the globe. I'm 2/3 of the way through the Void podcast. Yes, I have given you a 5-star review." This guy gave us a 5-star review, did you?
Yeah. No, half the guys in Tradewinds haven't, bunch of dicks.
He says, "I'm currently on my last day of 75 hard.
And oh, man.
So now I know I can achieve anything. I've lost 17.7 kilograms.
Nope.
I'll have to use Google.
2.2 pounds. That's going to be about 35, 40 pounds.
Good for him.
Go, Austin, get the final number.
Is it 17.7?
Good
times
for
2.2.
Him. Did he leave his name?
We're waiting.
38.94.
38. Damn, he lost almost 40 pounds on 75 hard.
Nice.
My family is also
good
planning on starting a new business called Anchor Plumbing on the 1st of June. We have the intention on volunteering a plumbing day, which has already started, and again, inspired by the Void podcast.
Nice.
Love the work you do, and I wanted to let you know the impact you have. Thanks, Tim Stevenson from New Zealand.
Tim. Bro, thank you, man.
Thank you for the email.
Kick
we
ass.
Love that stuff.
New Zealand.
We get that stuff from the States every now and then, but it's really cool to get one from New Zealand.
That's
so
badass.
I might have to.
We should have. We should reach out to him.
Let's say this. If I ever sell Smedley Plumbing and I got like a stack of cash.
First off, I would love to go red stag hunting in New Zealand.
I might have
if Tim
to go,
could somehow make that happen. Tim, yeah. Thank you. That would be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Great for him. 38 feel free pounds. To, nice job, bud.
Feel free to shoot us an email. Where
Get
did
him,
this
brother.
One? Where did this one go to? So he did askmitch@mitchsmedley.com.
Nice.
So, yeah.
That makes me proud.
Cool stuff. So, until next week, guys, we will catch up with you later.
See you guys.